All right, my friends, welcome back to the Outsmart ADHD channel. I'm your host, Jamie Catino, your hopefully favorite occupational therapist, fellow ADHD coach, and 2x TEDx speaker. I have a treat for you today, my friends, because I have Skye Watterson with me today from the ADHD Skills Lab podcast. She is an academic with over 7 years of experience working in adult education. She has studied in various fields in psychology, sociology, public health, and is now a doctorate candidate in population health. Skye, you were diagnosed at the start of your doctorate. Can you talk to me a little bit more about that?
Yeah, definitely. So basically, with my doctorate, I did a master's and I was like, that was a lot.
Yeah.
And then I was like, okay, I need to see what I have. There was people thought maybe dyslexia in my family. So I went to the Inclusive Learning Center. I had no idea about, I knew what ADHD was in terms of kids because I'd studied it, but not in terms of adults. And so I came back and they said, look, we don't know about this dyslexia, but we're pretty sure you have ADHD. And I was like, you're sure I have what now?
So it came as a surprise to you.
Yeah.
That it was ADHD versus over dyslexia. Can I ask what your symptoms were that made you think maybe there's something going on here?
Yes, my writing, which is what I did a lot of and still do, was wildly, some days it was great, some days it was bad. I would sometimes get really bad grades on my essays and be like, I don't understand what happened. Or I would miss questions in an exam. I always had to be there double checking I'd got all the questions. And I thought it might be dyslexia, but what they found when they did the testing, which was really good testing, was it was because I wasn't fully paying attention to everything. I'd skim and I wouldn't finish sentences. And that was more of the ADHD side coming out.
And so you went almost all of your formal education years not knowing you have ADHD. Now, I'm assuming that you compensated the best that you could, but what was your education experience like? Was it very challenging? Did school come natural to you?
Yeah, it was challenging, but it was also, it was a bit of everything. I think I had that spiky profile that people talk about in terms of, there was a lot of overcompensating, a lot of working on weekends, a lot of burnout. So I would take a year off between years sometimes. And so a lot of it was developing a system that worked for me. And then once I realized I had ADHD, going, okay, this system has worked for me, but it's 100% over-engineered. Like I am like throwing salt over my shoulder, worked that one time. So it's going on the list of things we do.
Being a brilliant, very successful person, did you have people that said to you like, oh, there's no way, Skye, that you have ADHD. Look at you. You have more degrees than a thermometer. Did you run into any of that?
It's classic ADHD that you say brilliant and very successful. And I'm like, she mustn't be talking about somebody else. But yeah, I think it was both. I think my academic friends were like, that does make sense. Because I did well, but I did well in a sort of erratic way, if that makes sense. So like the impulsivity was very much there. It was like, hey, like, why not have 2 jobs when you could have 3 jobs? Like, why not do a digital design course and then be like, oh, that's not for me. We're doing sociology instead. Like, why not go through 3 different careers? Like, I did psychology and then sociology and then public health. That's not actually the natural career trajectory for an academic.
When I saw in your bio that you have done so many things, so can I ask what you did in the psychology field, in the sociology field, in the public health? I want to know a little bit more about this.
Yeah, sure. I'd love to. Yeah. So initially I was like, I'm going to be a clinical psychologist. And that was like my focus. So I spent the first 3 years, I would say hyper-focused looking back now on doing that, on getting those grades. And I got all the way to the top, but there's only 10 people out of like hundreds who get in. So I got to 30, but not to 10. They said, try again next year. And I was like, this high. No, thank you. It was a lot. It was great learning though, in terms of developing those skills and understanding the psychology of how the brain works. I still use so much of that now, as well as what I did in working in volunteer counseling and all that kind of space. And then I took a bit of time. I did a postgrad, and that was also the recession for those of you who were around back then. So there's a lot going on. And then I went back into sociology because I really wanted to understand how people work And I was really trying to get a sense of it. And I don't even remember why. And this classic ADHD, I don't even remember why I decided to do that. I could have totally done something else, but it was just, I wanted to learn it and it sounded interesting. So I did it. I did really well. It was a super big surprise. I wasn't expecting that. And then I took time off and I actually went to art school for a year and did that. And then went, oh, I don't know if I want to be an art teacher. And then I was interested in public health because that had been where my sociology was leaning me towards. And I was lucky enough to get a scholarship.
You weren't lucky enough. You worked really hard and you're also very intelligent. And you know, that's the imposter syndrome coming out, but I just want to remind you that, Sky.
Thank you very much. Yeah. So I was able to do a doctorate and that was great because it was honestly the most stability I'd had in my whole life. I'd been working short-term teaching contract to short-term teaching contract, and having a PhD stipend was a huge ability for me to really sit and take a breath almost in my late 20s and think about what I wanted to do with my life. And it was really then that when I found out about ADHD, I started learning and developing and doing my own master's alongside what I was doing. Here, I started writing articles and researching and referencing them, putting them on the website. And that developed so beautifully into what Unconventional Organization is today. And in the end, I did make the decision with my supervisors who supported me to say, I'm not going to continue with the PhD. I'll hopefully come back to it at some point. I'm going to put all my energy into Unconventional Organization, which was really scary, but I think has been really great.
I was going to ask now, being someone that is an overachiever, there had to have been a little part of you that was like, okay, I know this is the best move for me. I know it in my heart, but I know how this looks on paper. I know how people are going to see me from the outside. Was that the most challenging part of making that decision?
100%. I think there was a lot of, okay, if I leave this, is this the thing that I'm doing? You know, is it just that I have this doctorate and that's a prestige thing? I know that putting all my focus into this is how I'm going to be able to help the most people and do what I love. But I am stepping away from something that has, at least traditionally, a bit of a career trajectory attached to it. It was very scary, but ultimately, I think it was the right decision and it's been a really wonderful thing. And it's also helped, I think, a lot with my clients. I work with some people who have to make some really tough decisions in a similar way, done amazing things. And I always say there's no moral correct. It's about what you want, about what makes sense for you.
And so tell me a little bit about what you do. Are you an ADHD coach? I, of course, went on the website and I'm just like, okay, I'm trying to find all the things. Where are all the pieces? So tell us a little bit more about what Unconventional Organization is.
Yes, definitely. So we're primarily at the moment a coaching business. And I personally, my clients, I work with academics, I work with people who run businesses, I work with people who are directors in like big Fortune 500 companies, things like that. And so what I really do is I help people with ADHD to build systems that help them reach their goals. And that's all that we're doing. So the systems and the learning, that's all in service of you and reaching your goal, essentially. So we learn as we move, if that makes sense.
It makes sense.
Yeah. And I think that's a really great way with ADHD. So what we've built the whole structure to do that. And we are coaching, but I would say we bring a lot of that traditional background I have in psychology, in sociology, and also in research, so that everything we do is research backed. It's coming from a place where it is also experience. I have ADHD, the coaches have ADHD, but it's also the research and kind of marry those two together. And we've recently started the Academy, which is a really great opportunity for people who maybe coaching is not something they can get at the moment. They can work with a community of other people who are also developing and they can learn strategies and do group coaching. And that's been so fun.
That's fantastic. And I'm going to take a wild guess with your clients also being very high achieving that you've got probably a lot of people with imposter syndrome that are like at the top of the corporate chain and they're saying, I don't know how I got here. How do you coach these people and help them to realize, no, you really did. You worked your butt off. You're very smart and you're here for a reason.
Yeah, it's a really good question. I think a lot of it, what I do is I talk about, okay, we're going to lay everything out and we're going to build the system. Some of the best advice I've seen is, it's not necessarily about imposter syndrome is a natural part of pushing yourself. Mm-hmm. And so it's about recognizing it, acknowledging it, honoring it, and not necessarily paying too much attention to it outside of grounding and supporting yourself, but focusing more on, okay, this is where I want to go. These are the steps to get there. We've built out this plan. We've helped you with the focus flow that you need to do it. And now it's just, let's just focus on step one. We don't have to get to a place where we're mentally prepared to take step 10. We'll be there when we get there.
Absolutely. I can just tell that you're the most phenomenal coach, Sky, because I do the same thing in my coaching. Okay, listen, this is your big goal, the first step mm-hmm. to get there. And let's just think about that for
100%.
So can you talk to me a little bit more about these practical strategies that you've used for yourself, that you use with your clients?
Yeah, definitely. So it's in three chunks, I would say. The first thing we do when people come in is they feel super overwhelmed. So we focus very much, and I have my notes on the side here, so you see me looking away, that's why.
Oh, you're good.
The first thing we focus really on is that idea of focus, on grounding yourself, focusing yourself, understanding, okay, what do I actually want to do? What am I struggling with? And then how do I actually get to a place where I can take those dopamine steps down into actually focusing and getting started, that task initiation piece that I know you've mentioned before, to actually start. And then from there, we talk about being proactive. Okay, you know you can start, you know where you're going, but the week is crazy. It fills up. Things happen all the time. How do we create an ADHD-friendly system to manage that, a calendar system, a prioritization system? And then the last piece that we tack on there is that consistency, which we all know with ADHD. Oh, this is so great, but give me a month and I'll be off the hook. So we work on that. We work on, okay, how do we make these routines flexible so they're stretchy and squishy and they work with your week? And how do we sprinkle sensory things throughout your week to keep that dopamine high, to keep you re-engaging and refocusing in the things that are working and not going off and doing something new entirely?
The inner nerd and the academic in me and is just geeking out over here when you're mentioning sensory and how you're able to put dopamine in the steps to actually do the thing mm-hmm. because being dopamine deficient humans mm-hmm. need that yeah. to get started to overcome some of the executive dysfunction. So I'm obsessed with all of this. Can you give me just a snapshot of an example of what a flexible routine looks like?
Yes, definitely. And it's funny you should talk about the dopamine. So if we think about, say, a morning routine, right? That's a good example of something people sometimes want to start with. When it's flexible, what we're talking about is saying, okay, a morning routine tends to need a couple of things. We need some dopamine. You've just woken up to get you to actually wake up.
Right.
Sometimes we need something fun. We probably need some food and we should hopefully have some movement because we know from the research it's going to support your working memory, mm-hmm. which you're going to be using all day. So we want those three kind of in there. We also need you to get ready and get out the door, which are two very different things. And
very different things.
So we want to understand what it is that you do those things and chunk them together to make them a simple and reduce transition time. So we'd have, if you imagine it like a piece of jewelry, like a bracelet and there's mm-hmm. pieces on that bracelet. But exactly what that dopamine activity is, for example, we can swap that out. So you might say, okay, on a weekend day, maybe I want to do something really good, or maybe I want to play computer games for an hour, whatever's going to work for you that you're not going to do for 5 hours. But on really busy days, maybe it's just I pop on that really fun podcast that I love. And I also do some stretching. And so that takes care of the movement and the dopamine kind of at the same time, which is that habit stacking. And that is a very short, squished version of the routine. So that's how we create a flexible routine that if you wake up and you go, oh, I have an hour, you're still doing a little bit of everything versus those longer weekend days.
I'm obsessed with this because we need things that we need a routine that we can do very quickly that doesn't take a lot of
yes.
power. So yeah. I'm obsessed with all of this. Now, let's talk about ADHD in the workplace. As ADHDers, mm-hmm. a lot of times we have a very hard time sticking with a job for more than 4 months after all the dopamine is sucked out of it. Just
yeah.
dealing with talking to people and trying to understand their nuance when we are very blunt and we're not understanding. Can you talk mm-hmm. to me a little bit about what to do when you're in the workplace and you have ADHD?
Yeah, definitely. So I'm going to say, first of all, we're assuming that this is a workplace you want to stay in. And
yes.
Even if it's not, generally speaking, when I'm working with clients, I'll say, okay, let's try and make this workspace as ADHD friendly as possible.
Mm-hmm.
So then we know this is the best version of what this can be before we decide to do something else, because we want it to be an intentional move, not an unintentional jump. That's what we're trying to aim for.
Did you guys just hear that? I want to highlight that really quick. You want to make it as ADHD friendly as possible so you know what you're actually leaving before you go to the next thing where the grass might not actually be greener and the grass might actually be green where you're at and you had to water it a little bit.
Yeah.
Okay, continue, Sky. That was brilliant.
Exactly. No, you're okay. It's about that intention. So in terms of the workplace then, how do we make that ADHD friendly? It does depend on the work. I think the one number one thing I'd want to know is, what are you getting out of it? What do you enjoy about it? What works for you? Just to get a sense of even the purpose of it. Sometimes people do something they find very fulfilling, but it's very crazy. There's lots going on. And sometimes people find the work very unfulfilling, but the environment is good. And so it's good to get a sense of what we're doing with that. And then in terms of what you're doing, and again, it can be different, but one of the first things I'd say is like considering all five senses at work. So what are you doing that is, if you're listening to something, or you're, where are you working? Are you in a hot desking environment? Like, trying to make as much of those spaces beneficial for you as possible. And it's going to be slightly different on different days and different tasks and that kind of thing. And then what I would also say is also considering your energy throughout the day and how much control you have. If you can put things like meetings in the afternoon, generally speaking, that's going to be better for you. If you can have a few hours of focus to get something done during the day, that's going to be better for you. Because with ADHD, again, we struggle with those transition times. It's a huge problem.
Mm-hmm.
And so we can't run from meeting to meeting and then also get something done. That day is a day of meetings.
Right. Absolutely. And the good old saying of, hey, if you have an appointment at 3 p.m., like, nothing happens till 3 p.m. But if you know that all your meetings are in the afternoon, you have the entire morning to do your focused work. I love this. And especially with the people that you work with in higher power positions, I can imagine that these are the type of things that you're problem solving quite often.
Yeah, I get really deep into people's calendars so much of that. Because it really is, how you spend your time is how you spend your life. And that is something that with ADHD is really tough for us, because we're often not very aware of how we spend our time. And if we are aware of it, it's just another thing that we're using, or it feels like other people are using, to judge us. So it's about trying to refocus your, how you have your relationship almost with your calendar, with your planner and things like that, to be like, no, this is about making it work for me to reach my goals. And this is a non-judgment space where it's, okay, this is how it works for me. Mm-hmm. I'm going to do it that way. And then when we do those, really exciting things can happen.
Breaking down those ableist ideas of, this is how it's always been done, this is how it should be done. If you're not doing it this way, you're not doing it right. And helping them to realize there's a million different ways to do something in a million different ways it can look. Now, I want to know, as a business owner, Sky, it sounds like you have neurodivergent team members. Mm-hmm. As a baby business owner, I'm like 2 years out. I want to just soak in everything you have to say about managing and leading a neurodivergent team, how you motivate, how you give constructive criticism. I don't like those words. I can't think of a better word to say that. I just want to take in everything, Sky. So tell us everything.
First of all, I'll say it's so fun. And there's been amazing team members who've been here almost since the beginning. We've been going for three and a bit years now. And they've taken a chance on the new business, and it's seen it, them grow and it grow. It's been amazing. So I would say, first of all, it's lots of fun. The team is very, very neurodiverse. We ask the coaches to say, yep, I have ADHD. But we do know, like, a lot of the people who work on our back end are like, I have ADHD as well, or I do, or I have something else. So it's a very neurodiverse team. And so a lot of it is about working in that way. But I will also say, when you look at the research, what we found is that people who have ADHD communicate better with other people who have ADHD.
Absolutely.
And people who are neurotypical communicate better with other people who are neurotypical. And it's often that connecting piece between neurotypicals and people who have ADHD that can be the hard part. So in some ways, it's a bit easier than you would expect, because we all have a similar way of thinking. And then it becomes a case of being like, okay, it doesn't necessarily need A, B, C, D, E, F, G. Let's go from A to B and then to D. Mm-hmm. That being said, especially now as we're continuing to grow and continuing to scale, one of the greatest things we have is one of our team members is she's so amazing at building processes. Shout out to Robin if you've ever emailed her. She's amazing. And so she will build like a playbook for a lot of the things that we do to make sure everyone's on the same thing. And then one of the things I do and I love to do is at the beginning of the year, and I was just finishing it up a couple of weeks ago, meeting with all the members of the team and asking them what their personal goals are for the year and like helping to coach them and then give them what they need, the resources they need to do the best thing they can in their space. Sarah's our wonderful producer. That's her role. That's her responsibility. And so my job is just to help her, give her what she needs and be that check-in accountability person as well. And so a lot of it's about empowering the people in your business.
I love that you find, just like you do with your clients, you find their strengths and then let them work within their zone of genius.
Yeah.
So as you had mentioned that you employ other ADHD coaches, can I ask, how do you find someone that you trust with your people? Because I can tell that you have a big heart and you want to do the absolute best you can for them.
Yeah.
But you can't be everywhere all the time. And the only way to serve more people is to grow and expand and to have other coaches. But I want to know, as someone who is eventually going to be in that direction of having other coaches, how do you find someone that you trust with your people? How do you vet them? I'm just going to ask you as if you're business coaching right now, Scott.
Yeah, I know. I love it. I will say this is one of the hardest things. This is one of the hardest things. And when you find a person and they are amazing, you just give them everything that they need to be amazing. So what we've done, what we did last year, and we haven't been doing it at the moment because we are trying to think about rethinking the process, but we've been bringing people in. And because what we do is so specific to us, we actually pay people to train with us. So it's not necessarily about going out and doing another thing. We want people to have some kind of research background, some kind of academic background. It just fits with what we do. We have people who have PhDs and people who have masters and people who have bachelors and all that kind of stuff. But what we're focusing on is we have a curriculum of research that we have actually used to build the ADHD Academy, to be honest. And that is what we get new people who want to be coaches to go through. And then from there, we had trainee clients that they work with. And then from there, once they've done both of those things for a while, they've been working with us and training with us, then they become a coach. So it actually takes a really long time. And it can be very, I would say you do have to put a lot of energy in, but what you get out is amazing people.
Absolutely. And would you say that you're a pretty good judge of, say, a character in the first interview? Because I have yet to find an ADHDer that I don't find incredibly interesting and fun to talk to. But I know that not every one of them maybe is meant to be in that type of position. Now being over 3 years out, are you a pretty good judge of, okay, I think that they're going to fit in with the culture or the organization. This one might not so much. I would love your perspective on that.
Yeah, that's a great question. And I honestly think that, I think Seth Godin said it, somebody like that. The idea of I can't work with you until I work with you. And I think that's the case. I think when you're doing an interview, we all turn up, especially with ADHD, so masking that it's very hard to know. So what I try and do, and honestly what I've done, even when I was, we don't do cover letters. Ugh, those things are so frustrating.
Yep.
As much as possible, and this is something we're going to try and do more in the future, as quickly as possible, we just want you doing something. Mm-hmm. And then we can see, and you can see as quickly as possible, whether it's going to work for you. Because it's not necessarily about whether we just want to know if you're a good fit. And if you're not a good fit, then great. We want to, in some cases, we've said, hey, I think you're amazing over here. And they've gone and been amazing in a different place. So it's about as quickly as possible doing something together. That's where you really see what's happening.
And that makes complete sense. Do you ever find yourself doing ADHD coaching with your employees when they're struggling in an area?
Yes. Yes. We actually have, as part of our organization, and again, it was very much structured initially on what therapists do. We're not therapists by any means. They have supervision. We wanted to bring that in-house. So every week I meet with coaches, we chat about what's been going well, what hasn't been going well. And that brings us initially, especially when people are starting out, there's a lot of helping them do things in an ADHD friendly way, helping them learn I will say part of what we do is we try and make systems, and we're always tweaking within our business as ADHD friendly as possible. It's not just about supporting ADHD clients and members in an ADHD friendly way. We try and bring that to what we do as well.
I love this, and I can tell that you're like the world's greatest boss guy. I can tell that your employees are so lucky to be in your organization. I can tell you put so much love and thought in how to help them to develop personally and professionally. And I think that's just pretty damn awesome as a business owner.
Thanks.
You're welcome. Now, Sky, for everyone listening right now, they're gonna want to hear more. And where can they find you?
Yeah, you can go to unconventionalorganization.com to find everything. Organization with a Z or an S will get you there. So we are an international organization, and we have what you'll find on there. You'll find our podcast, the ADHD Skills Lab, which you can also find just by searching it on podcasts. And you'll also find a lot of free resources. So we have different articles, links to workbooks and videos and things that you can find there that are going to help you get started to meet your goals with ADHD.
Amazing. And don't worry, friends, I'm going to put the links for the website and the podcast in the show notes. I'm going to make it as easy as possible for you. Sky, I can't thank you enough for being on the show. Thank you so much for taking the time to chat and be so generous with your time. I super appreciate it.
No worries. It's been really great. And I'm looking forward to having you. We're going to have you on the podcast in a couple of weeks, which will be amazing as well.
I'm looking forward to it. Thank you so much, Sky.
Thanks.